Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 101 of Little Things for Bonsai People. It is the year 2025, or at least when this episode will be released, because we're still recording in 2024, but disregard that. And I don't know what year, what animal this year is. Last year was the wood dragon. I need to do some research. I wasn't prepared because we got up on an early Sunday morning to record this episode for y'all. And so today I am joined by one of my co-hosts, Carmen Lesko-Vienski. How's it going, Carmen?
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Cold in Michigan. We were just discussing.
Oh, yeah. It's 36, but feels like 25.
Oh, it was a little bit colder than that.
Yesterday. I think yesterday was colder. Yesterday it felt like 8. So
I was about to say, yeah. So we always talk about the weather with Carmen, but before we get too far with the weather, we need to introduce our new year and also our new show with our new guests. And our first guest this year is going to be Celia Smith of she's over in Dallas, Texas. How's it going, Celia?
It's going great. And it's certainly not as cold as it is over there where Carmen lives.
Yeah. Dallas is a little bit different. And we'll get into basically Sylvia's background and all of her bonsai experiences and what bonsai is like out in North Texas. I've only been to Dallas once. And it was not for a bonsai related thing. So curious to see what y'all got going on. And of course, your history and all the things that you've done with the Texas clubs over the past several years. So we'll get into that in just a moment. But before we get into that, I do need to mention that our podcast is sponsored by our amazing patrons. You can go over to patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. You can become a best bud for $5 and a bonsai friend for $1. Either way, you get into the Discord and you get to talk to amazing people about bonsai all day. And participate in things like we just did on our previous episode where we gave away a scholarship and awarded somebody with a lot of great goodies for the end of the year. But this time around, we have no new best buds or new best friend patrons because I basically covered all that right before, so we don't have anybody breaking the new year. But we do have a featured best bud in Bonsai Samurai. It was just a little shout out every episode to one of our best buds that are already on our list. Thank you so much for subscribing at the $5 level, Bonsai Samurai. And here's to a new year hanging out with our best buds. And of course, we have our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. Thank you, John, with Joshua Roth for sponsoring our show. And then, of course, we have, we're just going to go ahead and, you know, introduce our newer sponsor. It shouldn't be a surprise, but our newest sponsor is Underhill Bonsai, what do you know?
Do you know?
It's kind of, yeah, my thing. anyway, we also have our specimen best buds that we always have to mention as part of their perk at being at the $30 level at the very beginning of each episode on Ryuin Bonsai Garden in Australia. Thank you, Jay. And also Bill Butler with Bill's Bayou. And then I can't go much further without mentioning our editor, Matt O'Donnell. He makes it sound smart, cleans up our audio, and makes us enjoyable to listen to. Go over to mattodonnell.com and fill out a contact form on his website. I did confirm that is a way to contact him on a previous episode when he was on with us. And also, he has his own podcast show, Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know. Go check it out. He talks to people who are passionate about their passions, you know, basically what drives them to pursue their passions and their careers. And he said he was on episode 25. It's coming out soon, so keep an eye out for that. He is an audio engineer, so you can start your own podcast with him. And he's a set bassist in Nashville, Tennessee. And he's an all-around awesome guy. It's in the script, so I say it every time because I care, Matt. Because I care.
Not because I have to. It's true. Yeah.
but anyway, so let's get into the meat and potatoes and kick off this year the right way. So, Sylvia, how's it going? I know we got the weather update, but how is everything else going in your bonsai world?
In my bonsai world, everything is going fairly decently. Had a lot of rain this year, so the pines are not real happy about all that rain. No way to really cover everything up and keep it from being rained on constantly. So, you know, the color in the pines or on the pines is a little on the not as green as I would like it, but you know, aside from that, you know, you deal with fungal infections sometimes because of that. And so, you know, just keeping up with that. So a little busy, I guess.
Yeah.
Between that and house things, oh God, home has been upside down. But, it, you know, that's a normal here at the Smith household. Anybody who calls me and knows me, it's sort of like, so do you have time for all? Yeah, it is. It's pretty crazy around here.
Are you doing renovations or just house problems?
No, actually, we finished some renovations a little bit of, when was that? We finished, I guess, in September.
Okay.
Our living room totally redone, completely redone. And that was nuts. Mm-hmm. But since then, so my household is a little nutty. The youngest in our household is 14. Hmm. And the oldest in our household is 93.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
So we tackle and juggle a huge variety of ages and desires and needs and everything else. Mm-hmm. So it keeps the household very busy. So I'm always very busy.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, that's a wide range of ages to meet the needs for.
Yes, mm-hmm. just raising family, which really is the reason that I'm just now getting to where I can actually do bonsai, because my youngest is 14. So she's a little bit more able to kind of fend for herself some.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from all the running around and mommy Ubering.
Ah, yes. Classic.
You're just getting to that.
Oh, yeah. I'm very happy at the moment that he's very much a homebody. But I imagine within, you know, he's only 11. But I imagine the next couple of years, that's going to change a little bit. So. Oh, yeah.
It is. I mean, you know, once they hit junior high, it kind of gets a little nutty. They join everything. And mine is a homebody as well. But oh, my God. Yeah. So we have orchestra here. We have private lessons there. And then choir. Then, you know, rehearsals. And
oh, yeah.
And it's nuts. Yeah. Hey, can't you wait, Evan?
Yep, I know. It's coming for me, too.
All these things to look forward to.
Yeah, all these things to look forward to right after kinder start or preschool.
And it's funny you're mentioning all this because, Sylvia, you would have fit in pretty well with our episode that we did a little while back, was parenting and bonsai.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, we were just kind of going over the details of, like, how does someone manage a bonsai garden and travel and teach or do something that is a profession in bonsai and also have, you know, a realistic family life, you know? So that is an interesting dynamic there. Especially
Who were your guests that time?
It was just me, Mike, and Carmen, because we're all young parents.
Okay.
We'll have to get some more folks on.
I would have to say, I would find that extremely difficult. As a matter of fact, I would say, yeah, no, I really couldn't do that. I do a little bit of it now, and it's only been this last, I want to say the last 3 years, I guess, that I've been kind of starting to do that a little bit more, only because Howard and I are, you know, tag teaming it, right? Okay, mm-hmm. You've got the kids this weekend. I've got to go out of town because I got to go work with a client. And he's like, okay, you know, I've got it. But he works full time Monday through Friday, so until very late. It's kind of a rough gig.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only reason really that I was able to do my apprenticeship and kind of get to the point where where I am now is because during COVID, my husband he quit his job the day before everything shut down and then took up a part-time gig with an old friend. And was able to work from home part time and kind of take over all the childcare. And if that hadn't happened, you know, and he just kind of kept doing that all through my apprenticeship too. And if that hadn't happened, like if he was working full time, I don't think I could have cut it. So, you know, it's crazy. And he's starting a new job on Monday that's, you know, full time again. And so we're back to that point of, okay, trying to juggle, you know, when he gets home from school and when we're getting home from work. And so we're kind of getting back on that both full-time bandwagon. But I can't imagine if I didn't have him to, you know, handle most of the childcare. I don't think I could have done it. So it's, you know, it's tough.
Wow. Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. And poor Michael's new apprentice has a 3-year-old who he's awesome little kid, but it's very funny because he's wants so much attention. I love him so much, but I imagine it's got to be so hard to manage a 3-year-old and try to do bonsai full time.
Agreed.
We'll have to get that point of view at some point as well. But
mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we need to get a patch on in the future and kind mm-hmm. of talk to them as well, or mm-hmm. them. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's all right.
So one of the things with that is like, and we've talked about this on that episode where we're talking about with the parenting part, is just like how do we go from, you know, having presentable bonsai and show-worthy bonsai and stuff. And Sylvia, you have proven that in, like you said, the recent years, you have very fine bonsai. And I've seen pictures of your collection where you were standing with some of your, you know, your trees. I don't know how many trees you have now, but we can get into that in just a moment. But so the bonsai smiths, that's yes. what you and Howard are known as.
Yes.
So before we get further about, you know, trees that you have and your future plans and stuff, let's like go to the beginning. Mm-hmm. So when did you or when did Howard, who got who into bonsai first?
Wow. Okay. You're talking about the beginning. Are you ready?
Oh yeah. We're going to do a deep dive here.
Yeah, that's how we're even born yet. Yeah. Please don't follow it up by saying, oh, I was in kindergarten when that happened. Yeah. So actually Howard and I, a long time ago, met in high school. We had this, you know, we knew each other. We were good friends. You know, fast forward now, 10 years have gone by. We hadn't seen each other for a really long time. And then we kind of meet back again, run into each other under weird circumstances. But and then we start dating. So Howard tells me, you know, do you like bonsai? You know, then kill a cactus. What? So you don't want me around this. And Howard had probably about, I want to say about 50 trees, but that included like maybe 20, you know, halfway decent little bonsai. And then the rest of them were like cuttings and things of that nature, right? And I said, okay, you don't want to have anything to do with me because I will kill your trees. Then I had my first bonsai excursion. Now, granted, before this, I never spent any money of myself at all. And we went to a nursery down in the hill country, and I spent about $300 on bonsai, which it was weird for me. Bonsai and bonsai paraphernalia, you know, like books mm-hmm. and whatever. And then as we were dating, we were like, would stay up till 2 and 3 and 4 in the morning working on little trees.
That's so cute.
It's really adorable, but it's a disease, right?
Yeah.
I said, so as we, you know, then we got married and what have you. And I told Howard, I said, you know, everywhere we go, we stop at a bonsai shop, no matter where it is, everywhere we go. You guys know this ailment. And so, but we buy stuff and we buy a lot of stuff. And so like most of our, you know, vacation money is on trees. So we need to do some. We're running out of space. And we either need to stop buying or start selling. So we wound up with a license to sell. We started selling. That was in 96.
Cool.
So now fast forward, we've been selling bonsai at conventions and things like that, buy and sell. We try to say that our gig was we go and handpick all of our trees. We don't just, you know, mass purchase things, you know, on the phone. Because that was before computers, all that. Oh, I'm old. After that, it was like, okay, we really need a teacher. And that's how we wound up finding Boone. And the cool thing is, the way we found out finding Boone was through Michael. Because Michael wrote an article about his experience with Boone. He was his very first apprentice, and I don't know if he's told you this story. It literally was just he and Boone. He was like the only student that signed up for his intensive program at that time.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I don't remember if he's told me this one specifically where he was the only one there.
Yes. So it's like one-on-one with Boone, right, at that time. And so he wrote about that experience, and, you know, we'd known Michael for a few years prior to that, when he was, you know, like just starting off in pottery. So I've known him a long, long time.
Well, that's cool.
Anyways, that's when we started to go see Boone, and we kind of got into that whole, you know, intensive program and continued working with him. And over the years, it's been a little kind of, it just kept growing and growing. You know, we're like, in the Bonsai Society, we've done a lot of things. In the LSBF group, we've done a lot of things. And so it's just one of those things where you meet more people and just kind of, I met so many guest artists just being the program chair for our club and learned so much. But I really have to say that most everything that I've learned is through, you know, the help of Boone and him being my actual teacher. And so yeah, that's kind of a not so brief summary.
No, it's fine.
That's so cool. My first, so when I got into bonsai, I was working at the botanical gardens doing other things and then was suddenly like, hey, will you water these? I was like, sure, whatever. That's fine. I think that's literally what I said. I was like, oh yeah, sure, whatever. And, but the other woman who'd been caring for the collection, was going to the ABS show that year. And so I tagged along, and it's funny just because the very first seminar lecture thing I was in was actually with Boone, and I had no idea who he, like, I knew nothing. Like, I just went and was like, oh, this sounds interesting, repotting. And it's just interesting, this connection where Boone kind of shows up and like everybody who then kind of ends up in Michael's circle too, you know, like there's this weird connection with Boone, yeah, kind of being the first one in a lot of our stories. Yes, it's exactly. Very strange.
It's funny because sometimes, you know, we've gotten together in circles where we said, you know, like, it's turning out that Boone is like the teacher of teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of grown into that. Many people who have actually started out, you know, working with Boone and everything have actually gone on to do bigger things in bonsai. That's because... just because of what was taught.
Yeah. That, yeah,
it's a really fantastic foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So after the years of working with Boone and so you said it was around 96, you remember like starting to do the convention stuff. So you and Howard have a lot of experience going around and so it's close to 30 years there. I mean, how many conventions would you say? Like, was it mostly Texas conventions, or you guys did a lot of other stuff, or what does that look like?
Well, so most of the conventions that we were actually vendors at were Texas conventions, and up until like 99. Well, no, I'm sorry, up until 2001. You know, we did mostly just every year we did the LSBF bonsai, you know, convention, vending and such, right? Getting to know a lot of people and vending. But then after we started working with Boone, we kind of came to our backyard and kind of went, oh God, we own a bunch of crap. You know, so we went through and kind of did the house cleaning thing, you know, and started trying to beef up our collection and trying to really have better trees and learn the craft as it is, instead of just learning how to vend, you know? So it really took a big change at that time. And here I am, it's early in the morning. I forgot the original question.
It's okay.
It's like, it's too early in the day, but yeah, I mean, it changed. And then our trees changed and how we did things changed. So we stopped doing as many shows at that time, you know? And, I forgot the original question. So
No, it was just kind of going into, the Bonsai Smiths become known for y'all's quality and stuff. And that was one of the things when I met you, back at, what was this, last year?
Yeah, it was last year in March, May?
I can't remember. There was so many things.
Whenever BCI was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, then after that, it was more like putting shows together, and we became more hands-on with actual putting conventions together. So whenever the conventions came to Dallas, we usually, Howard or I or a combination of us therein, would... would actually be convention chair and what have you, but would always be in charge of the exhibition. Because what we wanted to do is we wanted to kind of up the ante as far as how you exhibit trees. We wanted to do more of that semi-formal display that we did over with Boone out at Bay Island Bonsai. And we just wanted to bring that into Texas. You know, it's like, you know, got to set up your tables correctly. You got to, you know, the flow of the show has to be a certain way. The trees have to display a certain way. And I think that started kind of catching on. I don't want to say that we were the instigators, but I kind of think we were. And I'm not saying that in a bad, well, in a narcissistic way either. I just, you know, it really just kind of trickled from here. And then Boone working with people over in Houston, and it just started kind of becoming a thing. And so people are definitely more conscious of how they show their trees in a display now. So I'm happy with that. And I'm very, very proud of that work, you know, and really trying to push that here in the Dallas area.
I've always been, well, surprised, I guess. I guess I never, until I really got into the bonsai world, I was surprised when I figured out how much bonsai was in Texas and how much good bonsai was in Texas. And I'm starting to see maybe why. I think maybe it has something to do with you and Howard here.
The trees have always been there. It's just like, for example, when I was a part of the Bonsai Society here in Dallas, and I did that for 25 years. So, the first show or the shows that they had were at the Dallas Arboretum, but literally it was just like fold the tables set out and people would bring their bonsai trees and just put them on top of the table, just outside the dining area there. And literally there's nothing to cover the table. Sometimes the trees were in plastic pots or growing containers. And it wasn't really a beautiful way to display the trees. It was just displaying the trees, but you're not really, I mean, sometimes they had weeds on them. And it wasn't really very, very beautiful. And so at that time I decided, okay, you know, let's try to change that. So I talked to the people at the Arboretum and I somehow convinced them to let me use the DeGolier estate, which was the interior that they never let anyone into, and allowed us to actually display our trees in a very semi-formal show there. And that was the first of the shows that we had here in Dallas that started kind of changing the way that we do things. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to see that happen. And that was about 15, almost 20 years ago.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai, and I just wanted to tell you guys about Save Bonsai. It's going to be happening from March 28th to the 30th, 2025. We're going to be everything Louisiana for a full weekend, so we're going to include a crawfish boil, homemade gumbo, and other food trucks and vendors that are very special, I guess you can say, the southern culture of Louisiana. And also, the show will include a bonsai show with its own special awards, including Best in Show, Best Showhen, Best Traditional Design, People's Choice Award, and also a tongue-in-cheek Best Bald Cypress Bonsai Award. Guest artists and visiting artists will include Julian Tsai, Sylvia Smith, Mike Lane, Carmen Lesko-Bienski, Dawn Ketting, Randy Bennett, and Guy Guidry. Each artist will be presenting demonstrations and giving workshops throughout the weekend. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go under our Save Bonsai Workshops tab, and you can sign up for just regular attendance. It's going to be $25 just to get into the exhibit tent, and then all the workshops will be spaced out, and they will all have individual pricing. We hope to see you guys there.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
That's the reason why we bring on guests like yourself, so that we can get history in different areas, you know, when it comes to, I mean, not just the United States. We've had other international guests too, but kind of trying to see if we can get a little bit of where did it start? You know, who were the people who were kind of being the pioneers, I guess you can say, because I mean, over in like California and, you know, the Pacific Northwest area, obviously bonsai was a little bit more elevated, but it didn't bleed over into the other parts of the U.S. For a while. And, you know, it takes time for our true bonsai scene, bonsai culture to kind of develop in these areas. I mean, I even feel like, you know, like where I'm at, you know, for Louisiana bonsai, things are constantly improving and changing as well. And you guys have way more clubs than we do. Louisiana clubs have also been recently introduced into what is called the Lone Star, I think.
Yeah, Lone Star Bonsai Federation. Yeah.
Yep. And so
I'm sure they're going to come up with a new name at some point, because obviously it's no longer Lone Star and only Lone Star. And funny enough, Howard and Mark Bynum from Fort Worth have been the ones who kind of had instigated, you know, kind of spreading that out beyond Texas. You know, why are we just in Texas? So we've always wanted to call it the, I don't know, the Southern Bonsai, you know, organization or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, because there's, it's just the United States is so big.
Mm-hmm.
It's so big. And to really spread out bonsai, you really have to connect with each other.
Mm.
So that's kind of what we're doing, I guess, is trying to find connections and trying to, you know, kind of grow.
So is Lone Star then, it's an organization trying to connect all the clubs in Texas and now outside of Texas?
So Lone Star Federation was well before Howard and I were part of the circle. It is a group of each club basically has a representative, and that representative meets with the other representatives of all the other clubs. Basically, initially it was to try to provide better programming. So at that time we didn't have the internet, you know, it was really difficult to get guest artists. Clubs were really small, so they couldn't really afford to bring, you know, big guest artists in. So LSBF would sort of gather money from everybody a little bit. Everybody kind of had an automatic membership. If you were a member of Dallas, you were automatically a member of LSBF, and like $10 from your donation, your membership was part of that donation to LSBF. Anyways, long story short, what LSBF did was they would bring in guest artists and some people have done this before. Some guest artists have done kind of the Lone Star Bonsai Federation kind of round, where they go through all of the bonsai clubs in Texas and visit and teach and, you know, give lectures, demos, et cetera. And that's how people learned back then, because there was hardly much of an outlet for, you know, learning from professionals. So yes.
It's funny you're talking about early Texas stuff. This is 1988.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And it says Lone Star State on it, Texas in July and Naka and Valvanus and Yoshimaria and Hill are on here. Like, there's a bunch of great artists on here.
That's
Texas
cool.
thing's been going on for a while. And this is
a long time.
Bonsai International magazine.
I love that their faces are all cool. In a star. It's like star white, star white, star white. It's hilarious.
That's the way it should be. But we don't do magazines like that anymore. But I love finding stuff
should.
Like that. When you said that, I was like, wait, I remember there was an old magazine flipping through. Yeah, really funny.
You'll have to send me a copy of that.
Yeah.
You were actually trying to reestablish some history here in the Dallas area, because unfortunately during the pandemic, a lot of things sort of disappeared. And some of the Dallas history, you know, the paperwork and the pictures and the things that we had before just kind of disappeared. And so so we're trying to hopefully recreate some of that while there are still members that still remember.
Yeah. So that's part of what I'm trying to do too is now that you mentioned it's like a lot of that stuff is lost. Like I'm starting a whole thing where I'm trying to gather as much information as I can about Vaughn Banting and it's particularly like Water Elms. It's like a little side project I mentioned earlier on the show. But yeah, a lot of that stuff's lost. And so I was talking to Randy Bennett and it's like, he's got Bonesight magazine sitting around that no one's ever photocopied or scanned or, you know, made an archive online or anything. So yeah, a lot of these early like 70s and 80s where that was like the heyday of Bonesight really starting to pick up, you know, and you know, that could be lost. And there was a lot of Bonesight history in the South, and John Naka and Ben Oki and all these other artists were here a lot, you know, not just more than a few times, you know? So, and when you were doing the clubs and stuff, did you guys, I'm assuming y'all would have like Naka stop by and stuff like that and other similar artists.
Yeah. And I tell you, the time that those guys came out to Dallas was before my time. I can finally say that. So 97 was when we joined the club, and 95 was the very first convention that we ever attended. And that was an ABS convention, a joint ABS convention, LSBF. And I believe John Naka was here at that time. But I didn't know who he was, right? It's sort of like the first time Howard and I went to Japan, just the two of us for fun. Like this was our supposedly honeymoon that we couldn't afford right away. So we went a couple of years later. And we were out in Omiya. And so then we were talking to Takayama. And you know, Omiya out there has all these, you know, great teachers of teachers kind of, you know, thing going over there. And you're meeting all these, you know, people and going to their bonsai shops, and you don't know who the heck they are. It's not until retrospect later, you know, 10 years later, you're going, oh, it was in their backyard. Like I met his wife. What? You know, they served me tea. Wait, what? You know, and it kind of freaks you out. So, but yeah, these guys were definitely before my time. And yep. So, yeah, but I heard a lot of really cool things and stories about that as well.
Yeah. And that's like I said, it's something that we need to kind of preserve is just remembering where early Bonesight came from in different parts of the country so that when we see different quality, you know, different quality of Bonesight across the map, they should be a little bit more obvious. And then, of course, things like selection of species and preferred styles and even down to like stand makers and Bonesight potters and stuff. So that's another important thing for me to kind of, you know, collect and kind of think about. And this podcast show serves as a kind of a little bit of a history on stuff. So we can tease out these little Ella, you know, these histories and pasts and stuff like that. Yeah. And I mean, we're talking like you said, 97, 96, we have to keep in mind it's 2025. So there's younger people listening to this now and they're like, oh, really? Like Bonesight trees like live that long? You know, because we have a lot of beginner listeners too.
Yes.
So that's
for
one thing
we have, you know, we're putting together now the first permanent collection of Bonesight here. Well, not the first. I take that back. Please don't anybody get mad at me. I didn't say that. we're going to put the first one here in Dallas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, out in the Fort Worth Botanical Gardens. And one of the trees that was donated to that was actually started by one of the founders of the Dallas Club, which at that time, instead of being called the Bonesight Society of Dallas, was the Texas Bonesight Society, or the Bonesight Society of Texas, because it was the only club in all of Texas. It was so bizarre.
Wow.
So that club started, I believe, in 67.
Oh, wow.
It was like part of the founder. And we have that tree right now residing in our backyard, just waiting for the collection to open up so we
That's
can have
amazing. Yeah. Like,
cool.
I don't know what the oldest Bonesight club in America would be, but that one's pretty close. to like top oldest then 67, right?
Yeah, 67. That's impressive. Insane. I don't know exactly when he started it, but I'm going to imagine it's not really much later than that.
Mm-hmm. And what's the tree?
It actually, that one is a crepe myrtle.
Oh, there you go.
A hollowed out crepe myrtle. Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty cool.
And so it's really interesting to hear about really early bonsai. And, you know, I don't know which species came into favoritism or trend, you know, because some people really get into certain trees in different times of their career or life. And it also depends on demographic, like where you're at. And I had no idea, you know, when crepe myrtles were even introduced into the United States, because I know that they have been they're obviously not from here. It's an Indian tree. And so it's funny to hear that crepe myrtles were definitely prevalent in the garden spaces of early Texas and American South. And then you hear about one getting started as a bonsai tree back in, you know, when it started, because one of my assumptions back in I call it the golden years of bonsai, because I mean, that's when we got, you know, John Naka's book and you know, that you had the other publications out that were inspiring people, but not necessarily the best inspirations, you know, like the Sunset books and all the goofy books that, you know, the hobby books that were out. And I think people were a lot more interested in pines and junipers and stuff like that, because that's what showed up on a lot of those covers. But for a crepe myrtle, that's interesting. And I don't know what a crepe myrtle has been in training for. What is that? How many years so far? My math is bad.
My math is off. Okay. Everybody, we'll back
33 plus 24.
Yeah.
75.
We're bonsai people, not mathematicians.
Not well. Okay, I don't know. Howard's pretty good at it, though.
So yeah, that's an old crepe myrtle. And the style of it. Did you have to restyle it? Has it been restyled over the years? Or
that's 75. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just don't want to be called out for my terrible math. 55. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. What's wrong with me? Okay, never mind.
See, everybody? I'm telling you. Hey, sorry. Back to your question. What was it?
And actually, I just worked it up as 57. But I did it. Look, I did it on my calculator.
There you go.
No.
That's the way I do math.
Smart.
Joking aside, yeah, no, the tree has been, you know, of course, it's been passed down from one person to another over the years, right? And so just recently, the person that donated it, they just like gave it to the collection. So we're just now getting around to working on it. This will be the very first year. I've had it all of about maybe 2 weeks in my backyard, so it hasn't been very... So the only thing that I think that just needs to be worked on it is just kind of rework the ramification. Mm-hmm. But otherwise and maybe a little, you know, finishing touches on the carving or the hollows, you know, just so they look a little more natural. But I mean, honestly, it's a pretty nice little tree. Yeah. It's pretty nice. And it's not even that little. it's probably about, I don't know. It's probably about 2 feet tall.
Yeah. Crepe myrtles, I've found, especially in this like southern areas of the United States, people love to pull crepe myrtles out of the ground quite large and then carve them down and stuff and do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, this
stuff
has like a 6-inch base on it. So,
yeah. Nice.
They're fun trees. They're really flexible, very, very sturdy.
They're also very finicky.
They can be. I learned that this year the hard way by cutting one of my oldest crepe myrtles back, and I'm like, okay, I need to reset the branching on this. And then the wood was so old and didn't have any latent buds. And I ended up, you know, so.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, stuff happens. But yeah, they can be tricky because they're like this weird subtropical deciduous evergreen thing that they just kind of adapt. So yeah, they can be kind of a weird tree to work with.
Buds like them.
Oh, yeah, they get torn up. But yeah, they're really cool. And so like the reason why I was kind of asking more about that tree is we had Julian Tsai on, you know, several episodes ago. And just a little disclaimer for our listeners, part of the, you know, one of the reasons why we have Sylvia on too is to also bring up the fact that she will be doing Sei Bonsai in March as well, alongside Julian Tsai. But we can get, we'll talk about that at the end of the episode. But Julian made some really great points when he was talking about older trees and generational trees and stuff like that, about how if someone grew a tree to become bonsai and then you get the next generational, like, care of that tree and the next person is responsible for it. And there's not a lot of that in the American South as far as older trees that have been passed on, unfortunately. You know, things happen. And education and bonsai might be lacking in some areas where there was great trees that just didn't make it, or hurricanes, you know, happen a lot. You guys are too north, but I mean, do hurricanes factor in on old collections that far up? Well, I mean, I'm ignorant to it.
For us, it's more winter or summer. I mean, it's just, they get a really ridiculous cold winter that comes out of nowhere, or an insane hot summer that pretty much comes about every so many years. But they seem to be getting worse. I mean, I have had a white pine in my collection for, now close to 25 years. And originally I was told, okay, you can't grow white pine in you know, Dallas. You just can't grow it, you know. But I had a little teeny tiny thing for about 7 years prior. And I said, okay, it's been 7 years. It looks great. So I'm thinking I can get a nice one now. And so my tree, I've regrown the apex at least twice on that tree. And so it's slow, but it does grow. And we get just enough cold here in North Texas that it's okay. It does fine. But it does not really like the summer. It slows down. It gets its screeching halt during the summer, you know, months. But this last summer, it almost died. It was so hot. It was so intense. The heat doesn't go away. It doesn't get any cooler at night. And it just stays hot. And so now I'm like, okay, Carmen, maybe we ought to talk, because I really need to find a new home for it up north somewhere. I've talked to a couple of people. Oh, I'm sorry, you're on the list now.
That's great.
I love you're on the list. Yeah. To see about maybe, you know, trading something out, or, you know, getting, you know, I don't know, bonsai books somewhere, you know, for an exchange, or actually just selling it. Because it's a nice tree and it needs a home worthy of its life. Mm-hmm. So I want it to live on. I don't want it to die here in Texas.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, that's an interesting point, that with how the climate's changing and everything, there's going to be a lot of trees that maybe need to move. And how do we figure that out and facilitate that? That's a whole other thing. I have to put that on my list now too, like facilitating tree moves based on climate preferences. Oh God. Okay. Here we go.
So that's funny though, because I think that as we become a lot more able to communicate with other places, you know, we're pretty much spread throughout, you know, the U.S. a little bit. Well, maybe not Evan and I, but for sure, you know, you're on the other side of, you know, far north of us. But with that open communication now, maybe we're able to do that a little bit better, you know, and internet, you know, selling and what have you. And then Carmen and I, we were talking this last at the Pacific about doing the same with bonsai exhibits, permanent exhibits, maybe getting the curators, because Howard and I just recently were named curators of this future collection here in Fort Worth. So I'm really excited about that, really excited. And the cool thing about that is that, and I know I'm sorry, I'm breaking into a different segue.
Oh, but, go for it.
Yeah, but that hopefully is going to start building now next year, because we've gotten a big donation for that. That's going to really help kind of push us over the edge and get us to in the building mode. But it's all coming together really nicely. And I'm really excited about that. But yeah, I think communication between all of the permanent exhibits will be awesome for that kind of thing. Like, what if we want to share bonsai tree exhibits? You know, this is on loan from, you know, Texas. This is on loan from, you know, California or from.
That'd be sweet. I mean, we've got 34 azaleas currently in our collection. And like, do we need 34 azaleas all the time? Like, maybe we do a rotating exhibit. Maybe they go somewhere else for a couple of years.
Rotating exhibit, or even just trade out. What if
we? Yeah, totally. You know? So yeah, I think I mentioned this to you at the expo, but with the American Public Garden Association, I don't know if you're the bonsai collection there is part of this, but I would definitely recommend looking into it because there's the curator out of the Phipps Conservatory in Pennsylvania is working on a consortium of bonsai gardens throughout the country so that curators can have this ability through, you know, the larger organization of APGA to have this kind of communication and network that that we're talking about. And I think it'd be so, so useful for us. So it's
awesome. We'll have to get together on that for sure.
Yeah, I gotta send him an email and see where that's at because it's been a little while since I chatted with him. But yeah, so there's some cool stuff moving there to connect, I think, bonsai with public gardens in general, which has been kind of a, you know, there have been collections at public gardens and but there hasn't been a huge, I don't know, bigger connection of bonsai collections and the bonsai community. You know, there's this kind of weird, some of it kind of gels and some of it is still kind of disconnected. And how do we bring all of these pieces together? So hopefully this will be a start of that, I guess.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like the thought, like you were saying a little bit earlier, Sylvia, like switching out trees and rotating, you know, displays for, you know, for public collections like this, because that's very much like that's how art museums function, too. I mean, why can't it be like that? You know,
yes, absolutely.
And then have renowned bonsai from different range, you know, different ranges in different areas, you know, given the, you know, that they could survive in those areas. Not pushing the limits of any particular species or trees, but, you know, that sounds like a really awesome thing to do because I don't, you know, Carmen's a lot more in this realm than I am with the curator kind of thing. But, you know, how many trees stay in those permanent public collections for so long? And, you know, what does that look like? Do trees move often from collection to collection? I mean, I feel like mm-hmm. that's like a whole other, that's obviously a whole other topic, but in a whole other world.
Yes, obviously, though, yeah.
Yeah, so.
It sounds like a fabulous grad student project. I'm going to like put that on my list for next year. Like, okay, let me find a grad student who's looking at museum studies and wants to do a project about moving long-term tree loans of trees around the country
yeah.
based on climate recommended. It's going to be a whole thing.
And then you get to take their report and just use it for your own.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They get a degree, I get a report. There yep. you go.
But yeah, that's really interesting. Because yeah, I mean, why not? And that's the kind of connectability, like we're talking about, like, Sylvia basically alluding to, like, the networking in bonsai has greatly improved. Cause we also keep in mind, like I mentioned this a few times earlier on in the show is stuff like the internet. The turn of the century of like the internet and stuff. When you start reading blog posts and stuff, like one of the things that got me really into bonsai was reading like Bill Valvanus and Harry Harrington and, you know, Jonas Dupuis, you know, all these blog posting websites that just popped up and became accessible very instantly. Like now to, you know, years down the road, now we're doing stuff like this, which this really helps because, you know, there might be a listener that chimes in that's a true beginner in bonsai and they live in the Dallas area and don't know that you're opening this public collection, but, you know, and like that could open another door for somebody. And that's why we do these things and talk to people. And that's, you know, everyone knows that I'm into the community side of it. Obviously, I spout that off. I get on my soapbox, start talking about, you know, networking and getting bonsai people together. But for this collection that you guys are putting together, I don't know. Did we get a date? Do y'all have a date for an official?
That's the thing is, and probably Carmen knows this. When you work with the city,
that's what I was figuring. Yeah, there's probably I'm sensitive to things for you, but not necessarily for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you work with the city, though, seriously, and you know, Howard did this a little bit because he was. Part of the national exhibit or national arboretum, sorry, their board for a little bit, for a year. I think Felix Laughlin was in that at that time. And, but it's insane. And the money for that one was like blows your mind, you know, how much money, you know, you're having to spend to just change out a courtyard. But, yeah, it's just lots of things. So, right, you have to get the permits, but then after you get the permits, you have to have the contractors and you have to have multiple contracting, and then you have to have the lines put in for all of the electrical and blah, 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 you know, and, yeah. And the city has to approve everything that you do. So sometime next year.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. I would recommend working with a city over a university.
Oh, might have to. Do we need to edit that out or?
Oh, no. Oh, I don't. Maybe. I mean, no. I think it's fine. They know.
Just joking.
We've emailed them. They know.
Yeah. But yeah. So that's one of the things that separates me from that world too, is like running a bonsai nursery versus working with, you know, fundings. You know, I've talked to David DeGrout about those kind of things too in the past, about, you know, what it takes to fund a public collection. It's pretty insane. Yeah.
The bureaucracies are just, it's really something.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. He was key in talking to us about, you know, what to look for, what we need, what, you know, he's definitely a great sounding board.
So how many trees are going to be in the collection? How many do you have staff outside of curators, volunteers? I want, tell me more.
Yeah. So right now we have about 27 trees or something like that. And our goal is to have at least beginning somewhere in the vicinity of about 75 trees to like trade out, and maybe want to grow it a little bit more than that. But not too humongously big, because, you know, sure, we don't want to get overwhelmed with trees that we don't really use all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. But we want to be able to rotate trees throughout the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea. We have to have a compound that's built to, you know, to house all of these. So we have a place to put that, and we have, we have that going. The display itself, the courtyard where the trees are going to be, that's easy. Like, I have a friend who has a friend or who knows a friend who's a construction person, okay? And we can get it done with, you know, we have, and I joked about this, you know, just bring some beer and, you know, some barbecue. And I mean, we could have it done in no time. But
yeah, that's the easy part.
That's not the way it works, you know? But yeah, that's kind of what we're looking at, is to have a good amount. Now, people, Howard and I are both primary curators. And then as far as people working it, you know, that's going to require volunteers and what have you. And right now we have a board for that group of like 7 people who are in charge of all of the trees that we're storing for that collection, because obviously we have nowhere else to put them except in our backyard right now. So, yeah. So that's where they are. But we definitely have a list of people, and we'll be taking in lots of volunteers to help us, you know, maintain the trees and keep things running smoothly.
Excellent. Yeah. I always tell folks who are wanting to get into bonsai that, you know, one of the best ways to start learning is just through volunteering, even if it's just pulling weeds. Like, as long as you're around the trees and having conversations about the trees, and you know, the more you learn, the more stuff you get to do with the trees. And it's, you know, it's a great way to really get yourself going in that. And it sounds like you're going to need help. So,
yeah, absolutely. And isn't that what a whole apprenticeship is in Japan?
Immersion.
Yeah. Weeds and cleaning up the yard. And
Here, let me sweep this for
the
you.
Beginning is just nothing but that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Clean, 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 clean.
We the nice way to say it is, you're immersed in bonsai, so you're going to learn, but you're also doing all these tasks. But but that's a huge part of it. Like, we were talking about display and stuff, and you mentioned this way earlier, Sylvia, about, you know, going from that show that was just a couple of folding tables to an elevated experience to let people know how important display is. And then in turn, the trees can become better. And then on top of that, opening a public collection, you know, which is something that I really wish, I've been talking to a lot of guys over here in and ladies in Louisiana about doing something public collection wise. And it's a challenge. It really is, because, you know, whoever manages the whatever for Louisiana is not going to listen to this show, but we don't have that kind of space or funding, unfortunately. We would love to. And it's like, it's exciting to hear about public collections opening up, because it elevates the experience even more. You know, like I've been to the North Carolina collection, and I've been to the Pacific, formerly Pacific Rim, but the Pacific Bonsai Museum, and seeing those elevated displays,
yeah,
and makes those trees more important. And, you know, even especially if they're historical, they're important to, like you said, like one of the that crepe myrtle that's going there. That's a historical tree. That's a very important tree to that collection.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is all really great, great news for that. And I know that Austin also has their own arboretum deal where they have trees on display. I don't know if are there any other Texas clubs that are on this. I know you said.
So the Austin area has the collection out there, the TTSB, the Texas State Bonsai Exhibit. And they've been around for, quite some time, actually. I'm going to guess somewhere in the vicinity about maybe 15, 20 years when they kind of started their exhibit. And so they do have it out in the Zilker Gardens out in the Austin area.
Yeah.
So that's the other. That's why I didn't want to say, I didn't mean to say we're the only ones. We're just up in North Texas, okay?
And one of the first.
There you go. Yes. Yeah. One of the first in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for sure.
Yeah.
So probably only the second one in Texas. There used to be another one that was it was a public display, but it was privately owned. So some people said yes and some people said no, that's not official because it belongs to a bonsai, you know, personal collection. And mm-hmm. Yeah. So we don't get into that.
So kind of moving through, we're getting a little bit later in our show. We normally run late anyway, so I'm not trying to push or wrap anything up, but I do want to talk about your trees, because we had alluded to much earlier about how it's challenging to keep a primed showable collection with family and stuff. And I was just wondering, how many trees do you have? What species are you working with? And do you have preferences? Well, like, what do you have, favorite species, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so probably in our collection we have between Howard and I, probably a good 150 trees that, you know, we really want to keep for ourselves.
Okay. apart from the ones that are going on the public display, right?
Yeah. Apart from the ones in the public display. And then we have a bunch of stuff that we're growing. Oh, yeah, that's something good to work on. Like, we have a lot of time to mm-hmm. do that. But we do have his and her trees. We don't have joint trees. I mean, literally, Howard has his trees. I have my collection. He has his collection. And we have two trees that are joint trees, a very big ash juniper that we collected from the Glen Rose area. And then we have a forest that we put together that was a challenge in our marriage and our way of communicating and compromising. Because trying to put a forest together with another person who has different views on how the forest should be put together, it was definitely a challenge. But that's our tree together. So we have a lot of trees.
Yeah.
Nice.
As far as show trees, you know, a lot of those definitely can be show trees. But how we've done it over the years is sort of pick one or two to really develop and work on regularly as a show tree, because we don't have time. We literally don't have time to do that. So yes, we have a lot of show trees, but right now they don't look like show trees. They look like just trees growing in our backyard. They're lucky to get water and food.
Uh-huh.
Boom.
And pest care. And that's what it looks like in our backyard most of the time. Sometimes I tell myself, God, I there's no way I'm a real artist, because, you know, my trees back there are looking like, you know, you go to all these other artists' backyard and their trees are immaculate and they look amazing. And I don't feel that way about my trees. They're always hairy and weedy and stuff like that. But, you know, it's called time, you mm-hmm. know, and where we spend our time and our family is definitely priority one. So until the girls are out on their own, like their brother, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's still a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had a episode a while back, that I thought was very, very fun to kind of talk about this topic that we're talking about now is like, how many show trees is appropriate for a private collection for someone who's, you know, who goes around and shows trees or just managing a collection. It's like, how many trees are show ready on your bench right now? And that was an interesting topic. And then, you know, you're mentioning that you have his and hers trees. And I love the thought of like bonsai couples because they're not very common. It's usually
we're a little bit of a rarity.
Yeah. It's usually one or the other person's thing. And the only other couple I can think of, and you know them, is Dawn and Donald Ketting. They both really enjoy bonsai together. Dawn being much more into it, obviously, but they do also have his and her trees as well. I think it's really cute. It's funny. And, you know, when you have two people enthusiastic at the same time, you would assume it would be a little bit easier to care for that many trees.
We still tag team on it, you know, and it's not really. And Howard knows, you know, as much, if not more than I do, for sure. I always credit him as my better half. But, you know, the joke is really is he started, you know, we have to tag team to go out to Boone's, right? He has to come back. I have to go. We can't both leave together to go, you know, do our program. Mm-hmm. And he somehow finagled it that he graduated first. And so we're actually... Well, because that was when he went and it just turned out he graduated, quote unquote, from class first. So he is my senior, right? If you look at it from bonsai, he is my senpai. I am always going to be his kohai.
Mm.
I told him he did that on purpose so that he will forever be under, you know, his, you know, he will always be my senior. So yeah. But he knows just as much. Yeah, absolutely. We love teaching together. There's just no time to do that. Howard has to work.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the things I was saying this earlier was that when I had met you guys at the Texas convention, this is one of the things that stood out to me was instantly like how you guys had all of y'all's trees that were for sale. I noticed the quality instantly. I was like, oh, there's not another, you know, well, there's not many trees in, you know, for sale that have this quality, this care. And that initially struck me. I was like, oh, these are nice little trees. And y'all had fair pricing on y'all's trees. I was like, oh, this is cool. But then it was the sudden like warmth of you and Harold together, just that instant, like Southern hospitality, like, how you doing? Like, and then we got in, you know, we stood there and talked for an hour or so. And that struck me and I was like, oh, this is a really special thing. And then when I found out both of y'all do it, I was like, this is different. So,
it's really cool. And we really enjoy having that commonality, you know, having the same hobby. It's really great.
And so I'm kind of segueing into conventions and stuff. And so when we met at that convention, we were just talking a little bit. And I did mention that we were looking for new faces to come teach in Louisiana. And, you know, we do the Say Bonsai show. And I brought it up to you. And you were like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And then when we started really seriously.
I was more excited than that, Evan.
Oh, I know. I'm that, trying to build.
I mean, your cool thing is your thing is really cool. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, I'm trying to build it up for the listeners so that they get a story, you know. But you were like, that sounds really cool, you know. And Say Bonsai is an evolving show And this is the first time that we're going to that true bonsai convention format where it's a 3-day thing as opposed to what we were tossing it back and forth. At first, it was 2 days, and then it was a single day because we didn't know if Louisiana bonsai was ready for that kind of big thing. And then when it kicked off this past year with Mike Lane and Guy Guidry, and we hit like this sweet spot with it, and we did 1 day though, and everybody was like, "Huh, this could be really cool if you did more days and y'all had more opportunities." And I was like, "Oh, I know some opportunities." So yeah, I hit you up, and then just by chance, I was talking to Joel Jenkins, one of our bonsai best buds and heavy contributor to the bonsai scene here in Louisiana. He's on the board with the Louisiana Bonsai Society. We mentioned Joel Jenkins a lot. Thanks, man. By the way, shout out to you, great guy, saying that, Julian Tsai's hitting the road too. That would be really cool if you could talk to him. And I was like, man, imagine if I got two brand new faces at the same time. And so you were like, Sylvia, you were like, yeah, let's do this. And I was like, cool. And then Julian hits me up and just like casually is like, my books are open and I got a little bit of time right there. And I was like, hell yes, let's make this happen. I'm really excited that we get to venture into this because you had mentioned this would be your first time going to go teach like this outside of the state.
Yeah. So most of it has been just kind of Dallas-Fort Worth area, you know, some of the southern cities and such. But it's mostly state and Texas. Now, work-wise, I work with people outside of Texas personally, but as far as conventions, this is definitely, you know, the first time. And it's the first time I've had enough time or the opportunity to go ahead and be able to break away to do something like that. So I'm really excited. I love teaching. So this is going to be a lot of fun for me.
What trees are you teaching at? Is it junipers? Is that?
Yeah. So, I mean, okay. So this is really funny because we're talking about like a 2-day intensive with, you know, Procumbens juniper, and people are probably say, what? Like, seriously? But Evan was telling me that there was kind of a thing out in Louisiana that, you know, some people were saying they were having a really hard time growing, you know, junipers out here, and people have a really hard time keeping them alive and et cetera, et cetera. So when he was telling me that, I was thinking, you know, this is like an excellent way to kind of work with people on this. So the scoop on this is that I'm actually going to be doing more of a comprehensive teaching of junipers in general. What a better way to do that than with a juniper that is a lot more hardy than any other juniper that you have out there. So we're working on the Procumbens, but these are not just Procumbens. These are like very old, probably about 30-year-old Procumbens that have come out of Southern California. And so they've been, if you know anything about Southern California, sometimes those trees kind of sit in pots for a really, really long time, right? So because of that, they tend to be weaker when you pull them out and you start potting them. And you can't just, it's not like the ones that you get at the regular nursery that have been there for a little while and such, and you just pull them out and you can almost practically bare root them and work on them. No, you have to be really careful with these when you work on them. And so that's very, very similar to working with trees that you've collected from nature. So when you're working on collective Yamadori, this is going to be very similar to that in terms of the state of being. It's a very old tree. It's a tree that hasn't been touched in a really long time, so you have to be really delicate with it. And so this is going to give me a really great opportunity to be able to teach people just comprehensive bonsai care for junipers in general. And if you can do that with this tree, you can do this with pretty much any other species of juniper that you have growing in your area. So I'm really looking forward to it because it's definitely not just a plain old Procumbens juniper workshop. Really, like, it's not a beginner workshop. This is for beginners and seasoned alike who want to really learn comprehensive bonsai technique for junipers.
I think that's great. Junipers are one of those things where, you know, everybody gets them as some of their first trees, especially the Procumbens, and you know, and they don't know how to manage them over time. It's like, okay, we throw some wires on it and leave with something that kind of looks like a bonsai. And then, like, then what, you know, and then they die a lot of times, or they just never really get to that next step. And so I think that this is the kind of stuff that we need to be doing, especially like, even like you said, it's great for beginners. It's a great entry point, but also for the people who've always had an interest in junipers and know about bonsai, but like need the full story. This is, yeah, this is going to be, that's going to be really good.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Really about that. Yeah, I am.
For Louisiana, the juniper challenge is, you know, since I've started working and running the nursery, that is one of the things. And Carmen, you're very correct in saying, like, someone comes in, they're like, I'm going to get a gift for my significant other. I'm like, you want the Mr. Miyagi tree this way, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what I tell them, you know, as just as kind of like a disarming to make it, you know, to make it more approachable, because Mr. Miyagi's a sweet, you know, sweet guy and the Karate Kid. And you're like, yeah, yeah, this makes sense. And that is the tree that gives them that first spark of interest most of the time, because, mm-hmm. You know, Louisiana's got a lot of bald cypress, and elms are very, very popular because they're a sure shot way to, you know, bring a tree to the brink of destruction if you're a beginner and you're like, oh, I'm almost about to kill this tree. And then it comes back and you're like, oh, nope, it's not that bad. But like, we need to kind of get people a little bit more acquainted with green mound junipers, because that's the funny thing about them, is that green mound could be mastered and made into a really, really fine bonsai tree, because, you know, and I've talked to Carmen, and also when I was, you know, up there with Michael, you know, talking with Michael Hagedorn and stuff, and he's got an old Percumans in his collection. And if I'm right, that's his first tree, Carmen. Is that still the one? I think he told me that's his first tree,
right? I don't
right?
think it's a Procumbens.
It's just a regular Percumans?
I don't know what it is. I can't remember.
I think he told me it was Percumans. I don't know if it's a Nana or not, but it's very interesting because he wrote a compelling article about that, where it's like Percumans Nana is basically Shimpaku foliage given to you like on a platter. You know, if you work with them long enough, they'll go from that spiny, you know, scale to a fine little Shimpaku similar foliage on them. And it's strong on its own roots. It's a very strong mm-hmm. plant. It's very flexible, very forgiving, especially in the American South, where it's been engineered as a raw, like a creeper here, as the green mound variety. And I mean, you know, working with Guy Guidry recently and going into his garden and seeing all of his old Percumans, I'm like, where the hell have these trees been? You know,
It's very underrated, I think.
Yeah.
As a species to actually make good bonsai with. I think Boone actually won like first place in like, I don't know if it was like Shohin's bonsai exhibit or I don't know if it was the Nationals. I can't remember. My memory just sucks right now. But he won like, you know, top award for a Percumbens. You know, mm-hmm. it's not about the tree. It's about the technique. It's about what you do with it.
Yeah.
About how you style it. And in this case, because these are very old trees, they're not the trees that you get from nursery. It'll be about the care and maintenance of those trees.
Yeah.
You know, how
it's
to take
about
care
the
of the roots.
Potential investment, you know, long term.
Yeah.
For these types of older trees. And, you know, like I've even had to learn that with some older deciduous trees that I have, you know, making decisions and the maintenance and the care. And that's where the junipers here in my area haven't been given the time to reach that age and that development mm-hmm. where people start noticing them like that, you know, because everyone makes the assumption like, oh, California juniper, that's an outstanding juniper. You know, the Sierra junipers and the Rocky Mountain junipers now are the new hotness, they're like the new trending tree for everybody to collect. And so, you know, everybody just thinks that the junipers are for the northerners, but it's really not, you know, because mm-hmm. we can also grow Japanese black pine here. And that's another tree that is beautiful and people really struggle with here in Louisiana. It's a combination of funguses, overwatering, underwatering, the summers, the wintering. Overwintering obviously is insane here because we don't know, like today it's 70 degrees outside. 3 days ago, it was 33 degrees. So it's just getting those things cued in and getting a really experienced bonsai artist like yourself to come in and fill in some of the gaps of knowledge is what we really, really need. So yeah, Say Bonsai is a really, really great opportunity for anyone that's looking to further their knowledge. And we're not just the Louisiana show. That's one of the things that we've been trying to kind of go through all this with other people. As I talked to Hurley Johnson of the Houston Club, and I was like, get those Houston trees that I saw at this past expo, get them over here, get those people over here. You know, I talked to Charlie Stefanino in Gainesville, Florida, and he's also in the clubs over there. I'm like, get those Florida trees over here. So, you know, networking and putting all that together, that's what the Lone Star is also trying to do, is with the bonsai clubs in Texas, is get the Gulf Coast states on board, you know. Because there's also there's a guy that listens to our show, you know, shout out to Austin Adkins. He came by the nursery a few times, and then he started a bonsai society in Oklahoma, you know. Yep. And there was nothing there, and so that's really awesome to know that we need to kind of build that out like that. So, but yeah, so we'll have you doing the per Cummins, Nana, and then and I know that you're doing some demonstrations as well. And we've got you on a really old Parsoni juniper that was pulled out of the landscape in New Orleans area too.
Yeah.
So that should be really interesting. Dennis Burke of the New Orleans Club, he pulled a couple of old Parsonis. And they're big, and you know, they're a little gangly in some areas, but they've got good trunks and movement. And I'm interested to see what you can do with that. And so there's going to be the demonstrations, of course, and the intensive workshop. So it'll be a good weekend, you know. I'm really anxious about it. If you can't tell, but also have high hopes for it.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's very great. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And then so, that ash juniper, right? Am I doing that ash juniper also, or is that somebody else doing that? Or
The ash juniper, that was something that we had discussed. And if it's because we also have, we can kind of talk about him too. I Dig Bonsai.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry. I haven't got his name in a while.
Michael. Oh God. Now you caught me. My uncle last name.
Yeah. But you can look him up. He's actually a collector in the Dallas area.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he's also agreed to be a vendor at our Say Bonsai show. And so he'll be bringing down trees that we'll be able to pick through and pick appropriate demo trees for you as well.
Okay.
And so that's really exciting. And that's another species of juniper that nobody really looks at, because ash juniper is something I only heard of last year.
No, they're great trees to work on. You know, the best thing about ash juniper is that spider mites don't like them.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's unique.
It's amazing. The spider mites could eat everything else and skip over the ash junipers. And it's such a cool thing to see. Well, it's not a cool thing to see, really, because your other trees look...
Then the other trees are suffering it.
It's more like a screaming, oh, crap, you know, they're out again. But at least the ash aren't affected.
That's excellent. I'm a fan now of that, because, man, I hate dealing with spider mites.
I know.
And there's also the potential for like the one seed juniper as well. I don't know. I haven't seen a whole lot of those, but I'm mentioning these junipers because they have potential in the Southeast range, you know, like they don't require that winter dormancy that everyone's scared of. So it's doable. It's very doable. And I've heard about one seed junipers growing in Florida and stuff. So, we're definitely going to get some good juniper work. I mean, I went back and looked at my list of things that I've got going on as far as the event calendar for Say Bonsai, and it's very juniper heavy. I hope people are ready, really, really ready for it. Even Guy Guidry's demoing a Shimpaku. I'm like, we're going to make this more obvious that this is what we're going to be doing. And vice versa, it's funny because then the display itself is, there's going to be a best in show category specifically for Bald Cypress. So I'm also doing just like a tongue in cheek, like, you know, bring your best bald cypress. I had a couple people share me images recently, and there's some really fun cypresses that people are going to bring. But we're going to concentrate on the junipers, but we're still going to call back to what we're all about here in Louisiana, which is obviously, I mean, we love the cypresses here. You know, like
how much space you have for trees? How many trees are coming? Do you know?
I'm looking for 60 trees this time. Last time we had 30. This time we should do 60. But also, so some updates on say bonsai real quick. 60 trees, demos and workshops throughout the entire weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday included. Live jazz music.
Ayo. I
just recently got in touch with a local performing artist that does jazz, and he knows Zydeco and he knows blues and other performers and stuff. I'm like, okay, well, let's make a cool little shindig with that. We've recently have reached up to like near, I don't know exactly the number on vendors, but we're like at almost at 20 vendors, which is insane for a show
crazy.
Like this. You know, I'm like, okay, our parking lot's going to be full of people with tents, which is a great thing. And our reach for vendors is really interesting too. So, we're going to have, I think her name's Chrissy, the one that sells scrolls. I think she's from Texas.
Yeah.
And then also we're going to have Eli Atkins from, you know, doing Waldo Street Pottery.
Oh, sweet.
I mean, just really awesome names, people that haven't been to Louisiana to vendor before. So yeah, it'll be a really great time on that. But yeah, Randy Bennett is overseeing the bonsai display. So we're hoping for a really interesting thing here, because I'm buying all of the appropriate rod and drapery to make the show have proper backdrops, tablecloths, everything that we need. So this is like the next step, you know. The next step is if this bonsai kicks off and it goes without a hitch and it's profitable and it becomes big enough, there's me and Doug are in talks of even like a permanent structure, like a convention building. So all kinds of really cool things. So no pressure, Sylvia.
to perform well and draw people in, right?
Yes, no pressure.
It's going to be great. I have no qualms.
I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Beyond that, so we talked lightly about some future stuff, but was there anything else in your future besides the curating the public collection there in Dallas, or, you know, future conventions that you're looking at this year?
I mean, this coming year, I haven't really done, I have yours set up, and we were going to restart our workshops because we used to run workshops prior to the pandemic, but we just haven't had an opportunity to do that. But no, I mean, I'd like to try to expand my my travel base, I guess. I'm ready to do that. I figure the girls have got, it's 4 more years before graduation and college, and I'm going to guess they're both going to be gone about the same time. So yeah, I'm just trying to gear up for when everybody's gone that I've already got something set up in the future. So I'm looking forward to actually doing more teaching and traveling and that kind of thing.
We'll have to get you up here to Michigan at some point.
I'd love to go out there. I'd love to go out.
I'll chat with our club and see if there's any openings for, I don't know. I know they've got a lot of stuff booked for this year, but maybe next year if this year doesn't work out. So,
and I know Evan had asked what kind of trees, and honestly, I really kind of love almost everything. And over these last, you know, practically 30 years, I have had the opportunity to work on a lot of trees because I do work on private collections. And so I've had the opportunity to work on a lot of different species of trees. So, I mean, I can go from deciduous to tropical to, you know, pines and junipers being some of my favorites, I guess. But pretty much everything. I like everything. Literally, I do. I like it, just about everything.
Mm-hmm. Everything comes with its own qualities and quirks that make it so fun. Everything.
And so, you tell me what I'm going to work on, and I'll be there.
Yeah. And so, as we come to a close on this episode, I was wondering if you were going to do more travels and your books, you know, were going to become more open. You were alluding to this year and possibly the next year. because the, you know, a lot of people are going to hear this episode. A lot of people are going to get to know you now. Would you like people to contact you for potential workshops and lectures and stuff like that? Or is that something on your mind?
Yeah, that would be good. Of course, I have to work around, you know, school schedules and things like that still. So they are going to be contingent on that part of the calendar, but certainly I'm open for that. You know, again, it's just something, I guess, you know, I've always enjoyed teaching. So it's fun to teach what you really like.
Yep. And so if like, Bonsai Clubs wanted to reach out to you, what email would they contact you from? So, cause I know you don't have a website or anything like that for the.
Yeah. You know what? My website kind of went down and we restarted it again. It is I can't remember if it's bonsaismiths.net or something of that nature, but best way to contact me would be, email would be, sylvia3smith@gmail.com.
Yep.
And
so, yeah. So that's sylvia3smith@gmail. Just putting it out there in case someone's listening that's in a club and they're like, oh, yeah, we need a new face and, you know, some different takes and more knowledge on the road. And they can contact you that way. So thank you for providing that information. And thank you so much for hanging out with us today and telling us your story and, you know, kind of going through and talking, you know, Texas bonsai history with us and stuff. It's really awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep. And so we're going to wrap it up. We usually just kind of do some shout outs at the very end here and then say goodbye to everyone. So, starting with me, cause that's just the turn order.
Starting with me.
That's the turn order. So I'm Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai. If you want more information or anything else from me, you can go over to underhillbonsai.com. There's articles that I've written, there. You can go over to Underhill Bonsai on YouTube. I have a new YouTube series that I've been working on, Bonsai 101, 102, 103, 104, and so on and so forth as we kind of expand on that. And then you can, of course, follow me on Instagram and Facebook if you would like to, under, you know, Underhill and also Evan Pardue. And then make sure you go over to underhillbonsaistore.com. I know it's a couple of different domains to look at there, but Squarespace has to operate separately from my blog site. And our main show sponsor, Josh Roth Tools, we sell all the full run of the full catalog of Josh Roth Tools. So go over there and check that out. We also ship nationwide, so you can purchase your loved one. I know it's going to be after the holidays, but maybe you got a gift card or some extra cash and you're like, I want to buy a bonsai tree. So we sell beginner stock and a little bit more developed free bonsai stock, depending on what we have available. So you can check that out over at underhillbonsaistore.com. And then for Mike Lane, you can go over to Ketsune Bonsai, like the tricksy little fox of myth from Japan, the Ketsune. So ketsunebonsai.com. Mike Lane is a Florida bonsai artist in South Fort Myers, and his specialty is in tropicals and in shohin. And if you are looking for booking, we had Mike on the previous episode, and Mike was telling us that he's very heavily booked for next year, but he might be able to wiggle some things in there. So you can contact him from his website, and of course follow him on Instagram. And then for our OG, we have to say that, the OG Bonsai Southeast, Nate Murray, you can go over to thebootbonsai.com. He's got a couple of trees that he will ship and sale from there. But Nate concentrates on collecting bald cypresses in the American South. So if you would like to go collect bald cypresses, Nate says he has a few weekends open this season in February. You can hit him up and go collect bald cypresses there. And then for Carmen, where can they go check out your stuff?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai. And this is coming out in January, isn't it? So hopefully my website's up, but I'm going to plug that later just in case it's not. No promises. next time I'll plug it. And don't forget to check out the Purple Pot Society, the National Women's Bonsai Group that works to encourage and inspire more women to get involved in bonsai. You don't have to be a woman to join the club, but that is our mission. So go ahead and support us. You could follow us on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Yep. And I am a member of the Purple Pot Society. Support Women in Boneside. Become a member of the Purple Pot Society. But yeah, thank you so much for hanging out, Sylvia.
I did not say that I have a Facebook page. It's Sylvia Smith's Bonsai.
No, yeah. There you go. There you go. There's an extra plug. Yeah, go
follow, like, and share.
Yep. Yeah.
I am pretty bad at posting, but I'm going to get better at it.
I know. I keep telling myself that too. I'm also terrible at posting. It's hard. We're busy.
Some Bonsai people are on it. They make posts every day and articles every week.
Okay, Evan.
I'm not even on top of that.
I need to hire an assistant is what I need.
I have a social media manager that puts out my videos and my reels and stuff, but
articles
are on me.
I got to rope my kid into it. I think he would do it. So he could be my social
media. He'd love it.
He'll be my social media manager.
That is an idea for sure.
But yeah, thank you so much for hanging out, Sylvia. And you guys. Yeah,
it was great to chat with you.
We're all be hanging out in late March.
I'm so excited.
Looking forward to that. That's going to be great. So as for our Bonsai buds out there, y'all have a great week and we'll catch up with you guys on the next one.
Bye.